This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kitan. With me, Tan Chung Han, and of course our guests on Pressing Matters, a show that tries to get behind the headlines, gets to the stories behind the headlines as it were, is Joyce Goh, Senior Editor with the Edge Media Group. Thank you so much for joining us this morning,
Joyce.
Thank you
for having me. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I wanted to begin actually with some news, a bit sad news, though it's news that perhaps we all have come to accept, the passing of Martin Landau, because the actor, age 89, you know, who led those incredible television series, Mission Impossible and Space 1999, I think. Also, I think the passing of George Romero, of course, who's the director of those zombie movies, all of which has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the kinds of issues we're going to be taking up in Pressing Matters this morning. But, you know, just to know, it's breaking news from us. Now, I want to begin, Joyce, with a story that, oh, we have a little thing bubbing. What's that sound?
It's a phone thing.
It's a phone thing. You know, they anticipated phones.
With wires and everything.
You know, they anticipated phones in Space 1999. It was amazing. Futuristic vision of humanity. Now, coming back to some older pursuits of humanity, gambling, games of chance. And apparently the Asian gaming market is seeing the return of high rollers from Macau, Malaysia and Cambodia after initially being scared away by China's anti-graft campaign the last couple of years. What do we know of this shift? I mean, is it been quite dramatic? And you've taken it up because clearly this is going to have some effect on our own gaming sector.
Right, yeah. I think how this came about was, I think we noticed that the gaming index for Macau seems to be tracking up, like, demand. And also, speaking to gaming analysts over the past few weeks, I've noticed that they've saying that up in Genting Highlands, our Genting Highlands, with the new Sky Casino that just opened in March 30th, a lot of people are going there to play. I mean, I don't know how true is that until I checked with one gaming analyst who went up midday and sent me a photo, and there were like, it was packed. So I'm wondering, who are all these people, right? And then you read, and I read up on Macau and all that, and you see Macau, it has been tracking up. If you look year to date, I think the Macau stocks are up on average by 26%. And this is according to Nomura Research Report. And you can see even the foreign research houses, they've been upping their estimates for gross gaming revenue for this year. This is Nomura and OCBC.
And so Macau gaming stocks are up about 26% year-to-date. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Now, which is interesting because if you compare it to, say, Genting, Malaysia, year-to-date, it's up almost 28%. So very much in line with what we're seeing in Macau.
Yes.
Looking at the holding company, though, Genting right now, year-to-date, up almost 21%. But looking at some current numbers, Genting right now, up 0.6%, up to 9 ringgit 61 cent per share. Genting Malaysia now up 0.5%, up to 5 ringgit 77.
Right.
You know, I've always fascinated by the link between certain types of consumer behavior and graft, right? The story, general story of graft in China, of course, also linked to luxury items, you know, handbags and shoes and things that could be gifts for officials, right? And then here again, you have the story of another form of consumption, of course, which is gambling, meaning suggesting that people have like surpluses, right? They have things to spend, and that's quite a fascinating dimension of the story. Not the dimension of the story that you took on, but still there, right?
Yeah, I think I spoke to a few analysts to ask them about Macau because it's gone up quite a bit, right? And Vincent Koo, the head of research for UOB Kay Hian, he's also he covers gaming. He pointed out that this year seems to be the first substantial recovery since the slowdown that Macau had a few years ago. But the question is, because recently the Chinese government announced a clampdown on cash withdrawals from ATMs in Macau, where withdrawals cannot be done from machines that do not have facial recognition technology. So he pointed that out, right? That's interesting. So he says he's not sure whether this new measures imposed to limit this access to funds might hamper the growth.
Yeah, right. And in fact, China also, I think, recently rolled out this ruling that you have to report any credit card transactions of about $150 US or more, you know,
So you have these kind of clamp down.
Right.
Yeah, you know, this kind of clamp down on these kind of payments or, you know, when it comes to capital flows. But yet, at least for the first half of this year, you know, Macau's gaming scene unaffected by these measures. Huh?
Yes. I spoke to another local banking analyst with a local bank. He didn't want to be named here, but he shared that.
Oh, you know, it's a he.
Oh. Yes. Ooh. Yes.
So that discusses half the world.
Yeah, correct. So you can narrow it down to gaming analyst and a he, right?
Okay.
So so he shared that apparently the what we're seeing this uptick in Macau gaming sector currently, we're seeing it because of the loosening monetary policy that China had over a year ago. So there's a lag. So he's now saying that so we could be reaching the peak and we may see. Later on, because now there's tightening of monetary policy in a way in China. So we might see that impacting this growth later on.
You know, I must say, you know, I was inspired in part, Joyce, by your trip up to Genting some months ago.
Yes. Did you go after that?
No, I didn't go to Genting, but I went to Marina Sands in
how's
Singapore.
That?
No.
That's almost $6.
Let's put it this way, right? I was expecting to see a lot of people, you know, high rollers, you know, with mink coats and, you know, with bow ties and all be very, very posh. In fact, when you go into the gaming thing, I spent no money. I just walked into with a friend. I wanted to capo. I just wanted to see what it's like and get a sense of the atmosphere. It was just a lot of people, like, you know, in shorts and flip-flops and just seemed like ordinary people. I don't know if they have shorts and flip-flops because they've lost so much money. They basically lost the shirts off their backs. But they seemed like just ordinary Joe Blows and, you know, and not particularly posh in the environment. And I wonder about that as well, you know.
But are they playing?
Yeah, they're all playing. They weren't like me. They weren't observing. Yeah. They were serious players.
Right, yeah,
and,
right.
You know, I think it was some minimum like $50 play on, you know, a range of things.
Right.
And I wasn't going to spend that money on something that clearly was not going to have, you know, an immediate or guaranteed return.
But
$50 on a meal, okay, maybe. But $50 on gambling, no way, right. Jose.
To each their own, then.
Sorry, the local analyst shared that Singapore still remains flattish if you're talking about gaming, and also the Philippines after what happened there recently, that had impacted demand a bit. Yeah.
But there has been an outlook for the Malaysian gaming sector. Is that right?
Yes,
yes.
And also Cambodia.
Okay.
This is Naga Corp that's listed there. They saw strong gross gaming revenue growth of 40%.
Right. And because also inspired partially by Joyce's comments about Genting, I did go up to Genting recently as well.
Oh, how was that?
Well, more for the food, but not so much the gaming. But I did check it out, you know, do some research there, or gaming analyst, as you call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gaming analysis. And yeah, you know, I had the same observation as Shred as well. You know, the clientele that were there, yeah, it's not something that you would really expect, not the high roller kind of image that you project. But nevertheless, there were plenty of them with this sling bag with all their cash and chips in there. The sling bags were everywhere. But yeah, you're right. They were just absolutely just glued to their screens and just spending money like there was no tomorrow.
What would you go eat there?
There's the lobsters place.
Oh, yeah. Did you have to line up?
No. But then looking at Genting's net income here, I mean, because in 2016, they actually saw an increase of over 2 billion ringgit in net income versus the 1.4 billion that they saw in 2015. So perhaps with that kind of pent-up demand for the gaming sector here in Malaysia, you know, Genting could stand to benefit. Again, this is for Genting, the holdings company.
Okay, you're listening to Pressing Matters and our guest, Joyce Goh. She's a senior editor at the Edge Media Group. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Shahid Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han, and our guest, Joyce Goh, senior editor at the Edge Media Group. We were talking about gambling. Maybe there was some interesting dimension we missed out initially. Joyce, what else did you find out about this whole gambling specter, the fact that things are picking up in Macau?
Right. So basically, the analysts shared with me that there are differing reasons for the different countries where you see that, like in Malaysia, Macau and Cambodia, the pent-up demand there for gaming. But one common factor is the rise in the Chinese tourists in the region. That's what's fueling this in general. That's the common threat, the threat that they see that's going to like Macau, and then there's also they're coming to Malaysia as well and also in Cambodia. So I think that's one common reason that we see rise in demand.
I mean, it's interesting that tourism does shape the landscape in terms of the demands of tourists, right? Tourists go, depending on the cultures and places they come from, they want to see certain things. I mean, so the idea that you'd go to another country only to sit in a room full of your own countrymen, air conditioned, that has nothing to do with the country you're actually in, is fascinating.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you want to do when you go, and when you're on holiday.
And I'm sure
you could stay at home and gamble.
Yeah, that's true. But Genting's also coming out with that century, 20th century Fox thing.
The studio park.
That's why I think it's integrating your holiday for you.
Yeah, so while you spend the family's riches, the children can go off to play. their future being squandered.
Yeah, exactly, oblivious to the fact that their future prospects have just grown dimmer. But real quick, just looking at the Chinese tourist numbers, though. So they're expecting 4 million tourists from China this year, and that number is expected to double by 2020. How many of those 8 million in 2020 will be headed to Genting? I guess they will have to answer this question.
Macau is huge also with Chinese tourists, I guess. OCBC, they revised their forecast for the gross gaming revenue growth for Macau from 5% to 7% year on year to 12% year on year for 2017.
Wow.
And this is due to, they say, rosy performance of both the tourism sector and the gaming sector there. Yeah.
Okay. We also have, just moving on in terms of stories, a look at the mortgage market. Now, that's something that I don't generally I'm not alert to. It's not like a mortgage market. Let's read that story. Why is it interesting? What does the mortgage market tell us about the economy as a whole?
Right. I came about this story because I think Bank Negara just released their stats a couple of weeks, the most recent stats a couple of weeks ago. And I noticed that the approval rate for housing loans seem to be rising. I mean, at first I noticed that the demand, the applications were rising. But applications sometimes can mean nothing because you can apply and then it can be declined, right? But if we were to compare the application rates over the approval rates, that application and what's been given out, the loans that have been given out, you can see that approval rates for housing loans seem to be rising. So that's interesting to a certain extent, because it actually dropped below the 40% mark in March, and that has come up to 43.13%, the approval rate. Well, seem to have come up.
But when it comes to the applications, I think what we can read into this is that there is plenty of demand still from, hopefully, genuine home buyers, right? But it's the stringent lending or the stringent policies that Bank Negara has imposed on lenders here in Malaysia in trying to make sure that Malaysian households are not over-leveraged. I think that has put a dampener, right, on the sector as a whole. But yeah, you know, if these numbers do remain on this trend, looks like, you know, we could see more approvals coming into the market.
I spoke to a couple of bankers, and all of them say that it looks like things are picking up. Like, I spoke to OCBC's head of secured lending, OCBC Bank's head of secured lending, Tu Mei Ling, and she says things are clearly looking up following the cautious approach adopted due to uncertainties in the past 2 years, right? Mm. And she highlights that, more importantly, there is now a constant flow of buyers who are purchasing properties to stay rather than investment. And Nazri Othman, acting head of group retail banking at RHB Banking Group, says he is optimistic about the performance of the property market, like currently now. Yeah, it seems all of them are saying that, you know, they're seeing more individuals buying properties for their own use rather than speculation.
Yeah, those flippant flippers, those property flippers that were so infamous over the last few years.
And CIMB's head of cards, retail assets and deposits, Vipin Arawal, says that there's an increase in property launches, which includes affordable homes under Prima in the last 6 months. So all these things, all these factors seem to be attributing to perhaps the interest potentially returning to a mortgage market. But I spoke to a banking CEO and he shared that they are hoping that things are turning for the better, but he cautions that it's still early days.
Mm. And it's also interesting that some of the numbers used in your article, Joyce, in terms of defining what affordable properties are, it's from 400,000 to 600,000 ringgit, because I recall from our conversations, Sharad, the federal government's benchmark is about 500,000 ringgit or below. So this one seems to be pushing the envelope quite a fair bit, up to 600,000 ringgit. But
this was through my chat with Nazri Othman from RHB. I mean, my email interview with him. Yeah.
But still within that price segment, they're seeing plenty of approvals, or at least a rebound in approvals then, right?
They're launching more affordable properties, more launches. Okay. Yeah. And he's seeing applications for loans ranging from 360,000 to 540,000. That seems to be increasing. RHB shared that with us. So that's interesting. You can see that interest perhaps it's coming back. Yeah.
But then, like we just spoke to Simon Chen recently, just a few minutes ago, he's with Moody's Investor Services. He talked about one of the key risks for the domestic financial sector is the over-leveraging of Malaysian households, you know. So it's, you know, policymakers and banks, you know, and I mean, when looking at the NPL ratios, they got to really ascertain, right, you know, how creditworthy Malaysian households are. I think that's going to be an interesting trend moving forward. The numbers that you cited were for which month again?
This is for May 2017. This is from publicly available information. Mm. I called Bank Negara because they have their own mortgage approval rate number, but they said that is based on their own data. So if you want to look at publicly available information, that is the approval rate. So it was 42.13% in May. Yeah, it has come up from dipping below the 40% range in March. The last time it recorded the historical low was in January 2016, 38.34%. But of course, the rate is still way below the highs of 59%. This 59% was in 2013, and it actually hit 66.34% nearly 10 years ago.
Wow.
So there was a time when approval rates were actually high, right?
Right. Yeah. And hence the over-leveraged nature of households right now, you know, all the household debt.
No, but I guess if they can manage it, it's fine, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because, I mean, also, I've some of these numbers that I find interesting in the penultimate column of your article, 72% of housing loan borrowers were first-time buyers of homes.
Yeah,
all this price below 500,000 ringgit. So, again, plenty of demand. You know, and it's a theme that we often speak about here on the Morning Run, this disconnect, right, between what's available out there in the market versus the pent-up demand, or essentially the unaffordability of homes here in Malaysia. You know? But, you know, hopefully with these kind of numbers that at least banks are maybe less stringent with their mortgages?
It's not that it's about less stringent or not. I think it's whether the applicant can take on that mortgage.
It's sustainable for them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, whether they can afford that loan.
Yeah, Vic, we've had all kinds of media reports coming out looking at how people take loans not just for the 90%, but they take loans for the 10% that they should put down.
Yes, right.
They take loans for the
stuff,
for the legal fees.
Yeah,
I mean, so they...
For the renovations.
Everything. So, you know, so how do you... I mean, the idea is that if you can afford that, maybe that 10%, right, that down payment, then maybe it signals that you are in financially healthy or resilient enough to continue with something like a loan. But if you had to take a loan for every part of the process, then it suggests that maybe it's too early for you. And I think that's an issue also for young people with these aspirations is when do you buy that house? When do you go into the housing market? Not just, I've come out of university and the first year, you know, I've got to get the car and I've got the house, I've got to get the computer, you know. And I think there's often a lot impatience among young people.
Yeah, and impatience is one thing, but I keep going back to also that undersupply when it comes to affordable homes. I think that's important as well. And then something else that we often discuss when it comes to the issue of the unaffordability of homes in Malaysia is that whether or not renting is a viable option now. Because I think the edge...
Especially in the Klang Valley, right?
Yeah. Right. Yes. I think in the edge as well, there has been some real estate dedicated to the benefits of renting a property versus, say, outright buying it and getting into debt, like, you know, such a huge amount of debt so early on, right?
Mm, but I guess coming back to Sharad's point you're taking out so much loan to buy the house. That I think that is why Bank Negara introduced that stricter lending rules of a couple of years ago, where they imposed a maximum loan to value ratio of 70% for borrowers with three or more outstanding housing loans. I mean, if they have so many housing loans ready. So I mean, because before that, if it's your first loan, I think you can qualify for a loan to value ratio of up to 95%. So yeah. I guess that's fair if it's your first housing loan, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is clearly a conversation that has no end to it. But, you know, let's move on quickly. Some corporate news. Meter Prima's Dato' Sri Amrin Alauddin will be stepping down from the group as managing director. And Dr. Kamal Khalid will be taking over.
Yes, yes. We had that news break, I think, before the story broke. 2 weeks ago? A week plus ago, right? And,
How significant is this? I mean, as corporate news goes,
I think it's well surprising. I mean, it was surprising, but then again, when I spoke to some people on the ground, they said that Dato' Sri Amrin has already indicated that, you know, once it's time, they will step down because he had undertook the group through a transformation program, and I think that. I guess he thinks it's timely to pass on the baton to the next in line, and that is Dato' Kamal Khalid. Dato' Kamal is the current CEO of Media Prima's television network.
Okay.
And we understand like that restructuring was actually in place, or that restructuring plan has actually been in place for a few years, right? So this management shakeup is just part and parcel of the plan. That was what Media Prima conveyed to us.
I don't know if
that was just to, you know, kind of... Car markets, yeah. I'm not sure.
I guess the whole transformation program for the group has been ongoing for so many years now, right? And I think perhaps Dato' Sri Amrin has already mentioned to the team about this. But yeah, I think that's what has been happening. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, we're coming up to the news. Just a quick note, Victor Liu suggests that we all go to Vegas during Chinese New Year to have a look, to capo, as the word that you use, Joyce. He alleges half of Bursa owners are there during Chinese New Year.
But well, Victor, hey, if you are more than willing to sponsor our trip there, no, I'm all for it, buddy. You know where to find us. Come look for us, all right?
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news because then Enterprise takes over. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our guest, Joyce Goh, Senior Editor with the Edge Media Group. Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, signing off for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.